This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and Upsnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to Carpe Diem with your host, Lisa McDonald.
My mama told me when I was young, we're all on superstars.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you so very much for joining me or rejoining me this lovely Friday morning. I'm super excited and immensely grateful for the guest that I have on my show today. He is stellar. He's been extremely pivotal in my journey, which we'll get to in our interview here. My guest today is Chris Atwood. And as I always do before I turn it over to Unscripted Dialogue, I'm just going to talk a little bit about Chris just to provide some background here. So Chris Atwood is co-author of the New York Times bestseller, The Passion Test, The Effortless Path to Discovering Your Life Purpose. The Passion Test has become the number one tool used worldwide to discover passion and connect with purpose, with over 1,500 passion test facilitators in more than 50 countries. During the past 10 years, Chris has become one of the leading trainers and authors in the transformational industry. He has put together some of the major strategic alliances in this industry, including arranging 70% of the interviews for the movie phenomenon, The Secret. Having managed more than 10 companies from startups to established industry leaders, sold millions of dollars in consulting and training services to companies like Sprint, Dell Computer, Royal Bank of Canada, Milan Bank, Ford Motor Company, and others, Chris is a knowledgeable and accomplished business leader. At the same time, having spent more than 10 years in extended meditation and more than 40 years with a daily meditation practice, he brings a deep understanding of life to his workshops, trainings, and presentations. His latest New York Times bestselling book, Your Hidden Riches, provides a guide for busy modern achievers to harness the power of ritual to create a rhythm to their life by managing their time, their energy, and their thinking, and access their inner hidden riches. So, Chris, I want to welcome you to my show, and thank you very much for being here. I know how off-the-hook busy you are and how plugged in you are into so many other people's lives and doing wonderful things. So thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Lisa. It's an honor and a privilege.
Well, thank you very much. And you know, I've always been grateful for all the guests that I've had on my show, but this is particularly a very important show for me, this chat that we're about to have of ending this particular guest today. For anybody who's followed me for the last 15 months, the Passion Test specifically has really transformed my journey. It's really altered my life in a way that I can't even really truly begin to describe. And I owe so much gratitude to both you and Janet. Janet also being the co-author of the book, The Passion Test. And so I've ramped you up. I've plugged this everywhere. I get immensely passionate talking about The Passion Test, and it's caught on. You know, a lot of people in my sector of the planet here have really tuned in, have really been keen, and a lot of testimonials that I'm receiving now from people who I've discussed The Passion Test with have said, Lisa, you know, thank you so much for introducing me to this book. I can't believe what it's done for my own life journey. So on behalf of everybody who I know this book has touched and deeply affected, I want to say thank you, Chris.
Oh, thank you so much, Lisa. Passion is where we all start, isn't it? You know, once we figure out this here to enjoy, then we have to start with passion. We have to start there.
Absolutely. And so what I'd like to ask you, Chris, is if we could go back to the inception of your journey. I'm always interested to know, you know, whether I have household name guests on my show or not. I'm always really inspired by the inception of people's journey. So where did this all begin for you? Like the beginning of your career, when you began to harness and tap into what your own passions were. If you could maybe talk to me a little bit about that.
Well, I'm going to start a little earlier, Lisa.
Great.
Because, you know, where my journey began is the same place every one of our journeys begins, which is when I was born. And you know, the thing I've realized, and this, we talked about this in our latest book, Your Hidden Riches, is that when we're born, there's a unique design for our life. We don't know we have a unique design for our life, but there is one. And it's like we get popped into this world and we're dropped into this massive puzzle. And as we grow up, you know, we're 1 year old, 2 years old, 5 years old, 10 years old, 20 years old, 30, 40, 50. There are all these pieces that keep being given to us of this incredible puzzle. But unlike the jigsaw puzzles that we may have solved at various times, there's no box top to tell us, you know, what does the finished picture look like, right?
Absolutely.
And so we have to figure it out for ourselves. And so just like everyone else, that's what happened to me, you know, that I went to college at UC Santa Barbara, and I was fortunate, as you know, and the longer you live, the more you realize when you begin to wake up to this reality that there is a unique design for your life, you begin to realize that everything in your life is this amazing gift. And going to UC Santa Barbara was that for me, because I found myself plopped in the middle of student demonstrations, massive thousands and thousands the student protesting what the university administration was doing, protesting against the Vietnam War, and angry at the corporate institutions like the Bank of America that the students felt were funding that war. And it was a crazy time. You know, there were 3 riots in the first year I was in college.
Wow.
And one of them burned the Bank of America to the ground in this little town of Isla Vista right next to UC Santa Barbara. I mean, it shook me up big time. I was pretty much an observer. I was 17 years old. I didn't know what the heck was going on, you know? And I was kind of trying to make sense of it and figure it all out. And I said, well, maybe there's something positive I can do. So out of the ashes of those fires came this amazing community development effort. And the community got together and without any authorization from anybody decided that they were going to create the Isla Vista Community Council, this governing body, this advisory body, really, because it had no authority whatsoever, but it would be representative of the people in this little community, primarily student community. And the university and the state immediately latched onto that and said, hey, here's a way that we can communicate with this group of people that's making so much problems for us, right? Mm-hmm. And so the university and the state got together and funded this little community council and gave the university planner to help with resolving some of the issues that the students were facing. And with that budget, one of the things they did is hired me as a planning director. Now,
wonderful.
I knew nothing about planning, okay? All I knew is we needed to do something different than we had done it before. But fortunately, this university planner was really quite wise and experienced and was a great mentor for me. And I say, Lisa, you know, for everyone listening, once you realize that there is a design for your life, once you realize that you're here for a purpose, one of the most valuable things you can do is look for mentors, look for people who have been there, who have in some way, whether they figured out the whole puzzle or not, they seem to have a good handle on the puzzle of their own life. And they've been able to navigate a bit, because those people will be able to show you shortcuts to get where you need and want to go. And that was the case with this university planner, is that he helped me to begin to see possibilities and things that could be done. And I and the other team members that we had, because we had probably 15 or 20 people working on this whole issue and trying to create new possibilities for this little community.
Beautiful.
We got to work, but here's the honest truth, Lisa, is that I was totally freaked out. By this time, I was 20 years old, and I had this major responsibility, $300,000 budget, which in 1972, that was a lot of money. That was like $1 million today, right? And
absolutely.
And I was just freaked out. And so my skin was flaking and I had indigestion constantly and I was like running around with like a chicken with my head cut off because I didn't know what to do next, you know? And one of my friends had been practicing the transcendental meditation technique for some time. And he said, Chris, you should really check out this meditation because it's a great way of dealing with stress. And they've even done some scientific research on it. And so I went and I looked and I went to the introductory introductory lectures, and I decided, well, it can't do any harm. That was my attitude, Lisa. It can't do any harm. It doesn't seem like it does anything bad, so maybe I'll try it, right? And so I did, and within a week, my indigestion was gone, and the flaking on my skin stopped, and I started feeling clear. You know, I started having some sense of where we were going, and that was really borne out a year later when I had to prepare a grant proposal for the next year's fund. And we had pages and pages of things that had been accomplished that I'd been the primary organizer and leader for, including major things, rezoning the entire community. I had gone down and represented the community, the planning commission at the county level and the board of supervisors. And we had done a major initiative with all the students and had to run two elections. And I mean, big,
wow.
Big things. And we allowed this, we, as a result of those things, we'd eliminated the possibility of overcrowding in the community. We allowed the students to be able to ride the buses with just paying a quarterly fee with their student fees. So for them, it felt like it was free. And it was big, you know. I was amazed. I was amazed. And I realized the only way that could have happened was because of this meditation practice, you know. And that was really, I would say, Lisa, for me, that was one of the first big puzzle pieces, is recognizing and realizing that our senses are constantly drawing us out. You know, what we see, what we hear, what we smell. We think that we have to go outward to accomplish things. And this meditation practice taught me for the first time that really, if we want to accomplish or be or do anything significant in life, we first have to go in.
Absolutely.
We have to come to that place of silence and peace that all of us have inside, and then act from that place. And then when we do that, it's amazing, remarkable, incredible, the things that become possible.
Well, I can attest to that completely as a result of both the passion test and the mastermind training that I received in California on two different occasions. And, you know, I've been in the personal development world for probably 20, 25 years as a result of being in social services. But the clarification, the fine tuning, the really, really getting abundantly clear as to what I felt I was meant to, really was birthed out of my partnership with you and Janet and your work. And for people who know me, they saw that in me. They just saw something morph and something unleash and something be tapped into. And it's for that reason that I tell everybody about the passion test. I endorse it everywhere because I want everybody to feel that wonderful and that aligned with who they truly are, and to discover what their life's purpose is and what their gifts are, what their talents are, what they're blessed with, and share it with the rest of the world. Because I truly believe that's what we're meant to do, it to be here. Our purpose is to share our gifts and our blessings with everybody.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
well, and the thing is that for many of us, we find that we get in our own way. And I was lucky, Lisa, you know, after that experience in college, and then I ended up becoming a teacher of transcendental meditation, went overseas and then work and did a whole variety of things for the next 20 years. But I really made decisions based upon the things that lit me up, the things that we call our passions today. And that was really kind of by accident, probably because my parents were wonderful and encouraged me to do that. But there came a point where that shifted. And that point was really where I met Janet and we got married. And something came in that I think most people face in their lives that I had never really grappled with. And that was my own beliefs, my own concepts. When Janet and I got married for the first time, I began to make decisions based on money instead of passion. And the reason for that is because I had this concept that I'm married now, so I have a responsibility. I have to take care of my wife. I have to pay the bills. I have to be responsible, right? Common beliefs that many people hold. And so when I went in to interview for jobs, I thought I got to get a job. So I interviewed for jobs. And when I interviewed, what I was interested in is how much money would it pay, not would I love it. Not was I really good at it even, but could I do it and would it pay a lot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so I went through four jobs in 5 years with that attitude, because what we teach today, as you know, Lisa, is that money-based decisions are simply not sustainable. That sooner or later, if you're making decisions based on money alone, sooner or later you're going to find that you can't continue doing that. It won't work, or you become miserable, or one thing or another happens, but money-based decisions are not sustainable. And so I went through that fairly quickly in 5 years, but I didn't realize that I had this belief or this concept. And it was during this time that Janet and I were introduced to the work of Byron Katie, which you know has become an integral part of the Passion Test. Because what we have discovered, what we know, what we have experienced is that the only thing that prevents any one of us from being able to discover and live the unique design of our life is our beliefs, our concepts that we have to live some particular way that someone else has taught us or said that we need to be or live or something, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's those concepts, those beliefs that put us in situations that end up making us unhappy and suffering. And while Janet and I were married, we dove into this whole concept of belief and at the same time, you know, after going through, I was going for my fifth job in 5 years, and Janet thought, well, she finally remembered this little test that she had created like 25 years before for herself that she hadn't really shared with anyone. And she took me through the Passion Test for the first time. And for the first time, I actually started consciously, and that's really the word I would underline, consciously making choices based on my passions. And beautiful. I think you're a beautiful example of what happens when you do that, because I know your story, and here you are hosting a radio show, and you've had books that are all over Canada, and that have inspired and excited so many children and parents all over, and all because you consciously chose in favor of your passions. And for me, when I started doing that, that's when my life began to shift again back to the way it had been when I had been unconsciously choosing in favor of my passions, right? But the value of making it conscious is that I was no longer falling into the traps of the concepts and the beliefs that had kept me in this money thing, which money is important. We all know money is important, but it can't be the first criteria for decision making. At the very best, it can be the second. You know, okay, is this something I love? Great, I love it. How do I make it work financially then? Right?
Very true. Very true. And the other factor that I'd like to focus on too, Chris, is, and I know this will resonate with our listening audience just because I fall into, you know, 50% of the demographic here, but, you know, another level, another layer, which I really respect you and Janet for, and what really resonated with me, as a result of being trained and mentored by both of you and the books itself themselves, is, you know, here's two people who were previously married, you know, had worked together, continue to remain the best of friends today. You know, Janet's now the godmother to your children, has a wonderful relationship with your current wife. And, you know, when we talk about living in a energetic space and being as positive as we can and operating at our highest vibrational level, you know, for the 50% plus of us who, you know, sometimes still have the residuals of having to deal with ex-partners that we shared them with and, you know, wanting to start fresh and trying to break free of things that we would deem to be unhealthy, I really have to say, outside of what I derived that totally catapulted me on my journey with my books and my radio show and speaking and all of that, is the example, the live example that you and Janet are, and, you know, what you depict and how just how you embody what it is to truly go to a place of love and love people and celebrate each other. It's really helped me, you know, co-parenting with my children, with their father. And it's really made things more cohesive. It's made things more collaborative. And, at one point I never would have thought that that would have been possible. And I just want to say thank you to that. That was another level of the Passion Test that I got, the fact that you continue to be partners, best of friends outside of your relationship with your wife. And I just want to say how stellar I think you both are as human beings for that alone.
Well, thank you so much for that. And you know, this is a big piece of the puzzle that every one of us has to deal with, is our relationships, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is how do I interact with people? And in particular, because we all feel this draw, or almost all of us feel this draw to having a romantic relationship, of having a deeply intimate relationship, that how we deal with that is a big part of the puzzle of life. Mm-hmm. And for Janet and I, as you know, it all came down to what do we choose to believe is true. And that's why the work of Byron Katie has been so important in that, in our solving the puzzle of our own lives. Because, you know, the work, as you're aware, is a simple but powerful way to find out what's really true for you, to question your own thoughts. And as we began to question our thoughts, and that we're getting a divorce, so does that means that we can't be friends anymore? Is that true? Can we really know that it's true, that we can't be friends, that we can't continue to love each other, even if we've realized that being married isn't the relationship that we should have? And we came to the conclusion that wasn't true. You know, why couldn't we love each other? We felt this deep love for each other. Why couldn't we love each other but transform the way in which we related to each other?
Beautiful.
And then we ask the next question that Katie asks is, how do I react when I have the thought that if we get a divorce, then we can't be friends. We can't love each other anymore. Well, I feel miserable because I care about this person. And it feels like there's a big piece of my life that's missing. And then who would we be without the thought that because we got a divorce, we can't love each other anymore? And well, who we would be is we would be with each other with open hearts and doing whatever made sense to do and support each other on our own paths. That's what we would do. And that's what we've done, right?
You completely embodied that.
And even now, you know, Janet and I are going through a major transition right now because she's taken over as CEO of the Passion Test programs and is guiding, directing the continued growth of the Passion Test and helping people to discover their passions, get clear on their purpose. And I'm stepping away from my responsibilities with the Passion Test programs to pursue a new passion and a new vision of creating this global lifelong learning club, which is all around this idea of how do you solve the puzzle of your life. And as we've been talking about, the place it starts, I believe, is with passion, mm-hmm. is getting clear on what is it you love, what is you that you care about. But there are other pieces that all of us need to solve, you know, and how do I support myself? How do I have a rich and wonderful relationship? How do I parent my kids well? How do I do my business in a way that's effective and allows me to be successful? And, you know, there are a slew of issues and challenges and questions we all are faced with. And they hit us at different times in our lives, for all of us, right? It's not like everyone has to deal with relationships when they're 20. I mean, Janet and I, our relationship started when I was 40, right? Mm-hmm. So they hit us at different times in our lives. And so I have this vision of creating this global lifelong learning club that is anchored with beautiful 5-star Bayul resorts. That means retreats, essentially, but that are also gorgeous, amazing places for people to come and work on solving the puzzle of their own lives. With training from the very best and top teachers and trainers in the world. And so we're in the process of gathering and have already gotten commitments from 10 or 15 of those people, but gathering some of the top trainers in the world who will be the patrons of the club. And then to be able to offer this kind of training through live stream in people's homes, through live events where our patrons are offering those things, and at these amazing retreats and training centers and resorts. There'll be a combination of a place that you can go to vacation and bring your kids and your parents and your whole family, mm-hmm. along with a place where you can learn and grow and go deeper into solving the puzzle of your own life, along with a place that is an opportunity to dive within, to experience deeper levels of your own spiritual life. So it will have all these dimensions, and we're working on the first one to be in Italy, but ultimately to have these resorts, these Bayul resorts, we'll call them, in places all over the world. And Bayul is a Tibetan Buddhist term that was coined and referred to in the 8th century and refers to places where the righteous go when the chaos of the world becomes too much.
Right? Beautiful. Well, that's fantastic. And when did you realize that this was a passion of yours, that this was something you wanted to embark and endeavor upon?
Well, a couple of years ago. Really.
Okay.
And I really dove into it and used all the tools that we've learned and that you've learned, Lisa, now that we teach. I created a picture of it. I hired an architect to help me design it even before I had a location for it. I wanted to be able to picture it in my mind. What would be the elements of it? And began talking to people about it. But then I realized in order for me to pursue this passion, this vision, that I had to transition in a smooth way from what I'd been doing in the past. We all have that. And so we had our new book, Your Hidden Riches, which came out in the fall of 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And then the last year, Janet and I have been, you know, figuring out how to make that transition. And then now it's actually happening. And so that the thing which is so great is that when you follow your passions, what you discover is that the things that you are choosing for yourself also end up being the best for everyone else. What I've seen is that as Janet over the last couple of months has taken on the full mantle of responsibility for making decisions for the Passionist programs, she's actually making better decisions than the two of us were to get
when
we were trying to do it together. Because now, you know, she has the clarity. Before we were kind of deferring to each other, you know,
mm-hmm.
but now there's no one to defer to. So she makes the decision and she's brilliant, you know, so she has great clarity. So what we're seeing is that she's making choices and decisions that are making the Passion Test program stronger. And I, on my side, am now beginning to work on putting together a team, and we're going to launch our first crowdfunding campaign on Indiegogo on April 18th. So, so both of us win from the situation, you know, which is really, I think, the nature of passion. When you get clear and when you understand the principles of living a passionate life, then you understand. I could have 2 years ago just walked away from and said, Janet, it's all yours. I've got this new passion. Goodbye. See you later.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I've learned enough over this time that even though it was hard for me, to be honest with you, Lisa, it was hard for me to keep working at what I'd been doing for the last 15 years while I had this new vision, this new thing that was pulling me, right?
Right.
But I have lived long enough and learned enough to know that if I walked away and left Janet in a position that she couldn't recover from, or that she felt really bad about,
mm-hmm.
that ultimately that would be bad for both of us, you know?
Absolutely. Well, and that's also who you are. I mean, from what I know of you and what I've, you know, admire and respect about you, that's really not the fiber of your makeup. That's not your DNA to do that to anybody, particularly somebody who's as significant to you as Janet. So,
well,
yeah.
But I think it's, you know, I think it's about how do you choose to live life in integrity?
Absolutely.
And one of the things that we teach is that the way that you build trust is by keeping commitments when you make them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes those commitments are unspoken, which makes it a little more challenging, to be honest, but which was kind of the nature of Janet and I didn't have an agreement that we're going to continue working together until this date. You know, that when we started out, it was open-ended. But there was an understanding that we were committed to each other and both of us would look after each other. And make sure that things went smoothly. So when we make a commitment, one of the things that I learned from T. Becker that I so appreciate, the founder of Peak Potentials, is that the way you build trust is you keep your commitments, even if they're painful, even if they cost you money. Now, it doesn't mean you may not renegotiate commitments. Sometimes you find, you can't keep a commitment, and so you go back to the person or the organization and say, you know, this has come up. Is it possible for us to restructure our agreement? And if they say, you know, in general, people are understanding and they'll say, okay, well, you know, we can do it this way. We can do it. We can rearrange it a bit. But if that's not true, then, you know, what Harv taught me and which I have done my best to live by is that even if it costs you money, even if it's painful, even if it causes you for a while not to follow your passions, even if there are costs to you of it, then you keep your commitment to the very best of your ability. And when you do, and to me, that's what's called living in integrity. And as you know, Lisa, in the Passion Test, we outlined 7 principles of living a passionate life. And one of them was this one, of living in integrity.
Absolutely. Well, congratulations to you both. I couldn't be happier for both of you on your chosen paths and how everything is just taking off for both of you. You both deserve that. What I'd like to know, Chris, as I'm sure my listeners would as well, is what are your rituals?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, as you may have already guessed, first and foremost is meditation. You know,
yes.
We have some, Janet and I have some dear friends in India, and one of them was raised in the U.S., went, got a PhD at Stanford, was, you know, summa cum laude or something, and then she went to India, and she made the decision to devote herself to a spiritual life, and now lives in an ashram in India and has that whole pathway for herself. But I remember Janet was interviewing Lynn, and she was talking about meditation. She said, you know, I just make a habit of when I get up in the morning, of the first thing that I do is to meditate, because I figure, let me give this day to God. And, you know, not all of us are spiritual, perhaps, but I have to say that deeply resonated with me is, can I get up and choose consciously to go within, to dive within, and to surrender my life to doing what is best, not only for myself, but for everyone else at the same time. And in the Vedic tradition of India, the Sanskrit term is dharma. Dharma means doing what's best for others and what's best for yourself at the same time. It's also called right action. And so for me, my first ritual is my meditation practice and yoga practice. And it is both a selfish thing of let me get clear, let me get grounded, let me begin my day with clarity. But it's also this aspect of let me surrender, let me remind myself, let me use this practice to remind myself that while I am here for me, because all of us have to be here for ourselves if we're going to serve to anyone else.
Absolutely.
I'm also here for everyone else. And let me be grounded in that space where I'm serving others and myself all the time, where I'm doing what's best for others and what's best for me all the time. You know it, Lisa, because we teach it in the Passion Test, is I love you and I love me. Can I have balance in my life between those two? And can I use my life for the benefit of the world in some significant way, while serving the needs that I and my family have at the same time? That to me, this is the challenge of life for every one of us. Mm-hmm. This is our opportunity. And as we discover the design of our own lives, we discover that that's where it's leading us. Every one of our lives, every one of us, as you know, Lisa, is born with a unique purpose for being alive, a purpose that no one but you can fulfill. And as long as you're doing things that keep you separated from that, you're going to feel miserable. You're going to be unhappy. As long as you do what other people have told you you're supposed to do, even when it doesn't feel right to you, you're going to suffer. You're going to be miserable. Because life is set up, it is structured to guide you onto the path of your unique purpose, your unique life's design. And when you get onto that path, then you discover that life's amazing, that things begin to show up that you couldn't have predicted, that there's fulfillment in places that you never thought there could be, that even difficult or challenging situations are not some insurmountable barrier, but simply an opportunity to express even more joy because you're able to find ways to go under or around or over those barriers in one way or another. And so, you know, recognizing that you have a unique purpose to fulfill in this life, I think, is one of the most critical pieces of solving life's puzzle. And once you've recognized that, then it's a matter of how do I stay on that path? And that's where passion comes in. Your passions are not accidents. It's not an accident that you love the things you love. It's not an accident that you care about the things you care about. Every single one of us is born, as you said, Lisa, with unique gifts, unique talents. And we're also born with things that we're drawn to, things that for whatever reason light us up. And the congruence of these two things, the things that we're naturally good at, your talents, your gifts, and the things that you love, the things that turn you on, when you bring those together and then find a way to serve a need that others have, that's how you create a fulfilling life. That's how you create a life that creates income for you, but also creates benefit, service to others at the same time. And while each of us has a unique purpose for being alive, as you know, Lisa, we all share one common purpose, and that common purpose is to be of service. The reason each one of us exists, whether we know it or not, is to be able to serve the other people in our lives. And our challenge, our opportunity, the puzzle for us to solve is how can we do that most effectively?
Wholeheartedly agree, and I've had goosebumps listening to this section of our conversation. I love it, Chris. You're speaking to me, you know, on every which level, and you know, and this is my favorite part about the passion test, is coming back to what I believe is the core belief of serving others and paying it forward. I mean, that's been my mantra my entire life, and you know, for any who expresses any level of, you know, depression or having a bad day or something went south, I always say to people, as I practice myself, you know, go do something for somebody else, and then let's talk. Let's see the change. Let's see the transformation. You can't go and help somebody else, be of benefit to somebody else, and still stay stuck in that energetic field of negativity. It's impossible.
That's right. That's exactly right.
And absolutely.
You know, we all have these times where sometimes we feel up and sometimes we don't. And in the passion test, we talked about it as nature's guidance system. Mm-hmm. And I always used to think that if I was having a bad day or if things weren't going well or I wasn't happy, then that meant that I had to fix myself. There was something wrong with me. I had to go do something to make myself feel better. Or I felt I had to change the way I was living. This was my mantra. I had to change how I was living because somehow I wasn't living properly, and that's why I was unhappy. So I had to eat better, or I had to get more exercise, or I had to, even just to play on what you were saying, Lisa, I have to go help more people, or I have to meditate more, or I have to be more regular in my meditation, or I have to do more yoga asanas, or I have to do more breathing exercises, or I have to get more rest, or whatever, you know, there's always something to do, right? Something to fix myself. And to be honest, it got exhausting. For anyone who's listening, I'm sure you can relate that if you always think that you have to fix yourself, it gets exhausting because, right? And I finally got to a place of thinking, man, it came a little later, actually. I realized first that this thing of needing to fix myself was actually a false belief. It was a false concept. When I wasn't feeling up, when I was feeling unhappy or I was feeling upset in some way or other, that didn't mean that there was something wrong with me. That meant there's something that I needed more clarity about, that there was something that if I kept going the way I was going, that something was going to blow up in my face. And so I came to realize what we've taught in the Passion Test book, which is that we all go through these periods of expansion and contraction. Mm-hmm. And contraction doesn't feel good generally. Contraction means all the things that we give negative associations with. So here, help me out, Lisa. Give our listeners some words that describe contraction. How do you feel when you feel contracted, when you feel shut down?
Toxic, withdrawn, negative, silent, invisible, dismissed, counterintuitive, counterproductive, all of that.
All of those things. And they can include things like be angry and irritable and frustrated.
Absolutely.
And anxious and worried. And they can even feel things like feeling exhausted. You know, all of those things are contraction. But on the other hand, we all have the experience of feeling expanded. And so give us some words how you feel when you feel expanded, Lisa.
Enlightened, elated, light, bright, carefree, in tune, aligned.
Yeah.
All of
and
that.
I'll bet somewhere in there is in love, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because the thing is when we feel expanded, we want to connect with other people. We want to go out. We want to accomplish things. We want to do things. And this was a big aha for me, Lisa, was realizing that these experiences of expansion and contraction were not as I had been taught and as I believed them to be. Experiences of expansion is good and contraction is bad, and because the contraction is bad, then I need to fix it, I need to change it. I came to realize, and Janet and I both together came to realize, that contraction just means that it's not a time to take action. It's not a time to interact with others. It's not a time to try and accomplish things, because guess what? You don't feel like doing it when you're contracted, right? The truth is that nature or life is asking you to go in, asking you to reflect, asking you to come back to yourself. And that's a time to be gentle with yourself, to be kind to yourself, to be compassionate with yourself. This is that, Lisa, you have, I forget, one or two little ones?
I have two, correct.
Yeah, that's right. And so when they're upset, when they were real tiny and they were really upset, did you yell at them then?
No, I didn't yell at them.
Oh. What did you naturally want to do?
Not when they were younger.
No, I know as they get older. But look at them when they're innocent, when they're little, and they fell and they scraped their knee and they're crying. You're not going to tell them, how stupid are you? What's wrong with you? Why did you go and fall down and skin your knee? You're not going to say that to a child.
Of course not.
You're going to say, oh, honey, come here. You know, let me hold you. I know, oh, it hurts so much, you know. Mm-hmm. And when we're contracted, our inner child is right there going through that same thing, you know.
Oh, and unfortunately, you're getting emotional here, because this is all about what I write about my books, as you know. I really believe in all of that. Yeah, right. You just touched a chord with me there.
Yeah. So so when we're feeling contracted, that's the time that we need to treat ourselves just as gently and lovingly as we would treat our little baby who fell and hurt himself or herself, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet what do most people do, Lisa, when they think they did something really stupid? What do they treat themselves kindly and gently, or do they do something else?
No, they live in shame. They feel shamed. And
yeah.
So they either act out behaviorally, or, you know, they get into this self-deprecating mode, or start doing things that would be uncharacteristic of who they are in their best energetic space. When they feel that people are proud of them, they then feel proud of themselves. They feel like, you know, they're in a good space. So absolutely.
So most people tend to beat themselves up when they think they made a mistake, you know? And
absolutely.
So the lesson of this Nietzsche's guidance system is that this is just life telling you, take it easy, slow down, stop, you know? And it's time you didn't do anything wrong, even if it appears that you did, even if other people think you did something wrong. Mm-hmm. You did the best you could in that moment. So the contraction is an opportunity to learn, or to go get a deeper understanding, or to discover what you need to know in order to take the next step forward. Now, on the other hand, when you feel expanded, what do you want to do? You want to go out. You want to get things done. You want to accomplish things. You're excited. You want to connect with people, because that's what you're supposed to do then. You know, when we're driving down the road and the light is red, what do you do, Lisa?
You stop.
You stop, right? And that's all that nature is saying, is that when you feel contracted, that's a red light. Stop, 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 stop. And you do that because you know that if you keep going, you're likely to end up, you could well end up getting rammed by another car coming from the side and get in a big accident. And that'd be a lot more painful than stopping for the red light, right? Mm-hmm. So just like that, when you begin to realize that contraction is just like that red light, it's there to help you and prevent you from getting into a big crash. Then you just stop. You come back. You get easy. Be gentle with yourself. Now, when the light turns green, now that's the time to go. You know, that's the time to put your foot on the gas, and that's the time to make things happen, because you naturally feel to do that. So this was a huge realization, as you know, Lisa, for me, and I know for thousands of people around the world. I get feedback all the time about how understanding nature's guidance system and this movement of contraction and expansion has completely changed the way in which they experience life. I know that this is fundamental to all of us. And if you're listening to this call, this show, then this is your opportunity to begin to change the way you respond to contraction. And one of the things that I've been saying recently, Lisa, is that the extent to which you live a fulfilled life is directly proportional, is directly related, I should say, directly related to how you respond to contraction. When you learn to respond to contraction in a way that is gentle and kind, then your life will take on a completely different character.
Well, let me ask you this then, Chris. So let's say you're approaching that traffic light and it's neither red nor green, but it's yellow. And you're still in that state of contraction. And, you know, I really get everything you're saying. You know, normally that's an indication that it's time to go within. It's time to nurture yourself. It's time to get clear as to, you know, what perhaps is off balance, what you need to take a step back from to regain the clarity. Now, do you think contraction can also be allayed or absolved by following intuitively, especially for people like yourself and myself, you know, being in the personal development world, we're nurturers, we're caregivers, we're empaths, you know, sometimes do you not think that the message or the mirror within getting back into a state of clarity and remembering what our gifts and our blessings are is to go interface with somebody who, you know, circumstantially has things tougher than yourself, or they're in a darker space, and knowing that you have voluntarily just shown up, you know, offered them a hug, offered them your time, your presence, that then not is only a gift to them, but that takes you from the yellow back to the green.
Yeah. So in the language that we use, Lisa, that's called using the tools. So let me just go through, you know, in the Passion Test, we describe the 7-step expansion process, part of Nietzsche's guidance systems. How do you return to expansion as quickly as possible? Because even when you realize contraction is not a bad thing, I think most of us would agree we'd rather be expanded than contracted if we had a choice, right? Mm-hmm. And so the first and most important step of being able to step out of contraction is to notice that you're contracted. If you don't notice, if you're not conscious, then there's nothing you can do about it, right? Mm-hmm. And so it begins by noticing. And that just begins with having the intention that when I'm contracted, I want to be conscious about it. The second thing is to breathe. Well, oftentimes when we get contracted, we stop breathing. We get tight. And so taking a few deep breaths and letting them out, it physically expands our chest, our body, our lungs, but it also helps create relaxation in the body. The third one is to ask to be open, because when you're contracted, Lisa, and someone asks you to do something that you know is going to help you feel better, for example, you know, will you come and help me work at this homeless shelter? And you know that makes you feel better, but you feel so contracted, if you weren't conscious about it, would you be more likely to say no or yes to someone asking that?
Mm-hmm.
You're going to say no because you're shut down, right? You're contracted. So asking, the third step is ask to be open to expand again. Consciously choose to say yes to things that you know will help you feel more expanded. The fourth and fifth steps are really critical. And very important. And by the way, all these 7 steps don't have to take longer than 30 seconds. right. in my experience. You know, it's not like this big, long process. The fourth step is to feel the feelings that are coming up. You know, is it anger? Is it grief? Is it resentment, bitterness, whatever it may be, feel those feelings as fully and completely as you can. And step five, along with that, notice, are there any physical sensations in your body associated with that feeling? And oftentimes we feel tightness in our gut or pain in our heart our shoulders or neck or our head. There's some sensations there. Let your awareness go to those sensations. Feel the feelings that are there. And then the sixth step is what you were talking about, Lisa, which is use the tools. A tool is anything that you know from experience will help you to feel more expanded again. Now, and the reason I wanted to share all of these, Lisa, is because one of the things that I discovered myself doing and what I think many spiritual or quote-unquote evolved people tend to do mm-hmm. is because we know that everything is a gift, at least we know it intellectually, mm-hmm. we sometimes short-circuit the process, which doesn't really serve us. So let me just give you an example. Many people in the world, when they feel contracted, they do things so that they don't have to feel their pain. They drink, you know, they drink alcohol or take drugs or they eat too much or they work too much or they do something too much, you know, that just so that somehow let me numb the pain so I don't have to feel it. Mm-hmm. And when you become conscious, you realize, well, those things are not going to serve me. So you may not do those things, but what we do instead is we try and trick ourselves into not feeling the pain. And so this is what I would find myself doing, is that I'd get upset about something and I'd really feel really hurt, deeply hurt, you know, my pain in my heart. Instead of feeling it and going into that pain and allowing myself to cry or sob or whatever it was that I needed in that moment, mm-hmm. I would start telling myself, well, you know, this is a gift. It'll be okay. You know, this thing is here to pass, not to stay. I'll get through this. I'll be all right. Do you know what I was doing when I was doing that, Lisa? All those things are true, by the way, but do you know what I was doing?
You jumped automatically to the tools.
That's right. I was skipping the feeling part, and yeah. which meant that it was just as if I was taking drugs, just as if I was drinking alcohol, you know? I was pushing those feelings down beneath the surface. And when you push those feelings down, when you don't allow yourself to feel them, they're going to show up later as cancer or heart disease or some other chronic illness or terminal illness. And because we can't hide ourselves from ourselves. You know, sooner or later, it's going to come out, and usually in ways that we would prefer we didn't have to experience. And so it's really important to allow yourself to feel the grief, to feel the anger, to feel the upset, whatever it may be, as fully as you can. Not to take it out on anyone. It means go away, go into a room, go somewhere, scream into a pillow, or cry your heart out in the privacy of your own bedroom, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. But once you've done that, then use the tools. And Lisa's suggestion is a great tool, which is go find someone who's in a lot worse situation than you are, and see if you can help them. That's a great tool, you know?
Well, Chris, I can't believe that we've already eaten up an hour here. I could talk to you forever, as you know, and I'm so grateful for your time, your insight, your inspiration. And, you know, every time I hear you talk, it's like hearing you talk for the first time. I get, you know, further clear, and it just keeps me going in terms of my own path and invigorating with my own passions. So I just want to say thank you very much, and I look forward to talking to you again behind the scenes. I know our paths will continue to cross. I'm committed to that. I'm setting my intentions on that. And I want to thank you to the listeners for joining us today on my show, Carpe Diem. I go live every Friday, 11:04 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you have any show topic ideas or you wish to appear as a guest on my show, please feel free to contact me at Lisa McDonald, MCDONALD 13 at gmail.com. Chris, it's been a pleasure as always. Thank you for everything you've done to enhance my own life. And I feel nothing but love and gratitude for you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Lisa. And I hope it's okay if I mention that, you know, this dream of this lifelong Learning Club Resorts is an impossible dream for me. And so anyone who's listening, if you'd like to follow the progress of my impossible dream and learn some of the things that may help you fulfill your own impossible dream, then I'd invite people to go to HiddenRichesResort.com. It's HiddenRichesResort.com. And I'll give you updates from time to time on how things are going, and you can see how an impossible dream unfolds.
Thank you so much, Chris. Love to everybody. Enjoy your day. Be safe. Be you and follow your passions. Love to all. Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Carpe Diem with your host, Lisa McDonald. For more information, please go to Lisa's website at lisamcdonaldauthor.com.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.